Extracts from Chapters of Experience, of Douglas Conacher. Book from 1973. Intro. Chapters of Experience by Douglas Conacher. Douglas Conacher was a deeply religious man and a successful London publisher, but he came to understand the truth of spirituality and reincarnation, through his experiences in the afterlife. In this book, are transcripts of those conversations, where he shares his interest in this truth and all he has learned in the next world. He gives accounts of his previous lives on Earth and a wealth of information on life in the spirit world, ranging from living conditions, thought communication, the creative arts and how we progress after death. Unusual because of its authorship, Chapters of Experience remains valuable for its message of enlightenment, yet it puts us in touch with our own immortality. This intro was from www.belieflus.com/books. Word mistakes may be here due to scan errors. The numbers that are read are mainly page numbers in the original book that was found online in a relatively poorly readable edition. Currently unavailable as paper book, we don't know when or if this item will be back in stock. September 25. https://www.amazon.in/chapters-experience-douglas-conacher/dp/058410068x, some from book found online on this book else. This book was received from the spirit world, by direct voice through the mediumship of Leslie Flint. Transcribed and compiled from tape recordings by Ira Conacher, dedicated to Leslie and Mickey. The spiritual guide of the medium Leslie Flint, with our love. We lived before, we live now, we live forever. Introduction. In order to sketch in a background to this book, which consists of communications from my husband since his death on June 6, 1958, a few personal notes are necessary. My husband and I did not meet until rather late in life. Douglas was 58, a confirmed bachelor, I was 39. And deeply involved in my work as art mistress in a school in Surrey. However, on August 12, 1937, a few months after what seemed a chance meeting, we were married. This was during the period of uneasy peace before the Second World War descended upon us all. Douglas had served in the First World War and knew only too well the horrors of war, and his highly sensitive nature was greatly affected by this second conflagration. Years of illness, operations, and frustrations followed, and it became necessary for him to give up his publishing business in the heart of London, and tried to find rest and peace in rural surroundings. My husband was deeply religious, and a devout member of the Church of England. The books he published were chiefly on orthodox religion and philosophy. He had an overwhelming love of books and read widely. But I never remember him reading anything of a psychic or occult character. Neither did we ever discuss these things. Douglas was sensitive to beauty in all its manifestations, but not disposed to fanciful ideas. He was forthright. Accuracy of statement was very important to him. As this book is concerned to a great extent with reincarnation, one of the most controversial of subjects, I feel it is necessary to mention these facts. We had 20 years of devoted companionship, and although the path we had to tread, and the lessons we had to learn, were often very difficult, sharing these trying experiences drew us closer together and made our love stronger. I had read a few books on the subject of life after death before my husband's passing, but my quest for spiritual knowledge started in earnest a few weeks after this crisis in my life. I set aside periods for silent meditation, and while listening to inspiring music tried to tune into the higher frequencies of the realms of spirit which surround us. These contacts have brought moments when the veil has been lifted a little, to reveal something of the intense beauty and vivid reality of life beyond physical vibrations. During this time, also, I was privileged to have sittings with many of the finest mediums of today. These brought great joy. Life took on a new radiance, and a new realization of its purpose and splendor dawned upon me. What I had dimly perceived before became clear and intelligible. I knew beyond a shadow of doubt that death, far from being the end of life, was indeed the gateway to life, and to ever-increasing life. Douglas and our relatives who had died, were wonderful in the way they worked together to bring evidence and information about their life and work on the various strata of the spirit world. I was classifying this material, with a view to compiling a book from the knowledge I had received through many forms of mediumship, when I found it necessary to put this idea on one side. In August 1959, I had the good fortune to meet Mr. Leslie Flint, a well-known medium of integrity, who has the rare gift of independent direct voice mediumship, and to be invited to his evening circles. These were great occasions. Later, I had many private sittings with him. Douglas soon became a very good communicator by direct voice, and expressed a wish to concentrate on this form of communication. He said, "This is by far the most direct method, and the most satisfactory one, once one has become used to it. There is much less likelihood of the medium, or the recipient of the messages, influencing what is being given. This is as direct as one can ever hope to get. That is why I would like my books, preferably, to be what I have been able to give you in this manner." The tape-recorded talks which comprise this book were given by Douglas during the years 1965 to 1967, usually at intervals of 2 or 3 weeks, but occasionally, when I had been called away from home, after a gap of several months. My husband's conversations from the spirit world during 1960-65 belong to an introductory series of communications. To avoid repetition as far as possible, I have deleted passages here and there, and in one or two instances, added a little information on the subject under discussion from recordings not otherwise used. The editing of Douglas' conversations has been kept to a minimum, so as not to interfere with his speech pattern. The result is that nearly every word in this book came from him by direct voice. The medium, Mr. Leslie Flint, does not go into trance, but remains normal throughout the séance, sometimes joining in the conversation. In his presence, the so-called dead are able to speak. Their voices do not emanate from his vocal organs. Usually, they seem to come from somewhere between the medium and the sitter. Occasionally, I have heard them come from high up in the room. These sittings with Mr. Flint have always been absolutely natural, and very happy occasions. Although Mr. Flint, and myself in this instance, are the only earthly people in the room, there are many discarnate helpers, not least of whom is Mickey, our master of ceremonies. He takes charge under the varying conditions which prevail at the time of the communication. His amusing remarks relieve any tension there may be, making us feel relaxed and happy. Mickey's last earthly life was brief, for he was killed at the age of 11, shortly before the First World War, while crossing the road near Camden Town Tube Station where he sold newspapers. After a short time in the spirit world, he chose to help Mr. Flint in this work. He is a great character who endears himself to us all. May these talks help to bring a clearer realization of the eternal nature of life, so that while living this present life to the full, and in the right way, there may be an inner awareness of the greater expressions of living that will be possible for each one of us, beyond the school of earth. Ira Konica. Author's Preface. I suppose it is quite natural and human to assume, as it seems on the surface, that birth is the beginning of life. But at the same time there is no evidence that man can bring forward to support this claim. Birth may be the dawning of a new experience, a new awareness, a new consciousness, a new opportunity of life under different circumstances, but it is not necessarily the beginning. In fact, we know that it is not. Birth is merely consciousness being reawakened or reborn into certain circumstances and conditions of life. What is, before or after so-called death? Death is the greatest illusion of all. So many people assume that after death there is nothing, oblivion, and they assume that before life begins on earth, before birth, there is oblivion. Nothing could be more untrue. Life is constant and continuous. It has no beginning, and no end. It is as if there were episodes in which you were conscious. Yet there are, to some extent without full realization, many aspects of life which man cannot bring to his consciousness, which are just as real, just as vital, just as important as any earthly life. There are conditions of life before birth just the same as there are conditions of life after birth, and one physical material existence is not necessarily the be-all and the end-all. Indeed, it is only one of innumerable lives. All these experiences are necessary and essential to the evolution and development of the human soul. Once life comes into being, it cannot be put out. It may be put out in a physical sense, or in a conscious sense, or in a sense of physical awareness, but life itself is always there. The energizing spirit that animates the form of life as you understand it in a material body is always present. Just because the physical body has not been born or the physical body has died, does not alter the fact that spiritual consciousness is still waiting to have its effect and to show itself through a form of life in a physical body. The spirit that is born into your world in a physical body does not suddenly become conscious and aware of new life. It has been aware and conscious of new life, of the life that is to come in a material world, possibly for a very long time beforehand, but it may not be able to animate, or at least it cannot express itself, until the physical body has reached a certain stage of development, and the brain is able to respond and react to the thought force of the spirit. The point is that the conscious spirit is always active, always alive. It only becomes individual when it inhabits a body, when on earth, a physical body, when on our side, a psychic or spiritual body. But behind all these varying bodies and degrees of consciousness, there is the ever-living spirit, which has been, is, and will continue to be. Man must not confine his consciousness and his realization of self to one physical earthly existence. That is a small part of the tremendous whole of man. It is impossible to explain fully what one wishes to convey, because words in themselves are not adequate. But man, with all his experience, with all his knowledge, with all his realization of truth, has only the minutest fraction, the minutest particle, of the realization of himself. When on earth, man has consciousness of many things appertaining to his own world, and sometimes he has a small grasp of the truth and knowledge of the world of spirit. But man will separate all these worlds, he will always separate this consciousness of life, because he cannot conceive of the fact that the earth world is but a fraction of the real world. There are dividing lines only because of man's lack of comprehension and realization of the power of the spirit, which is animating all life at all times on different strata of experience and expression. Man accepts, as he must do, his earthly existence, and will say, "Well, of course, we know of this existence because we are experiencing it every second, every moment of our daily lives. We know this world, we know this life which we are conscious and aware of every day, but we do not know of the world to come, if there is a world to come. And yet this so-called world to come is here and now, with you. You may not be able to see it, you may not be aware of it. But there are many things of which man can see certain results, but does not know of, in the same way as there are many aspects of his material existence which he does not understand but of which he can see the effect. In other words, because you do not see before birth, you have no consciousness of life before birth, no consciousness of lives previous to the one which you are now living, because you have no realization or consciousness of a world that is to come after physical death, man has become inclined to assume that there is but one life. But actually there are many lives, or many expressions of the spirit, through many physical and psychical bodies, going through eons and eons of what you term time, way back into the past and into the future. Then again, we know that the past and the present and the future are all one. And although there appear to be demarcation lines, there are no separating conditions except those which man himself creates through his ignorance and lack of understanding. When man realizes that he is an animating force under certain circumstances and conditions prevalent at that particular moment of time which is common and natural to him, and when he realizes that what is now could well have been in the past under different circumstances, and will be in the so-called future in a new environment and condition, he will realize his true nature. Man must not have this narrow concept that this moment is the only moment, that which has gone is not important, and that which is to come, if it is to come, is not important either. Man must see himself not as a body, but as a spirit which is indestructible and indefinable, which is at all times vibrant and living with great possibilities of tremendous change far removed from anything he can understand or comprehend. Of course there is much that you cannot hope to understand, and we certainly cannot tell you, but man should not think that this one life in which he finds himself is the beginning and the end. It is, as it were, but a small grain in the sands of experience, the sands of evolution. Life by its very nature must be continuous, it can never cease, it can never stop. All life is motion, movement, change, that in itself is life. If man ceased to think, ceased to comprehend, ceased to energize, ceased to revitalize himself and others, he would cease to exist. Man must, by his very nature, graduate slowly but surely from one level to another. Movement, motion, this is the essence of life. The expressing and the learning, the gaining and the growing, all this is man. Man is not a static thing. Anything that is static has no existence. In a sense, it has no real life. It has a momentary something, an expression or form or shape, perhaps, but it is not life. It is not something which is eternal and living, it is of no consequence. That which is man is constantly changing. He may not always be able to comprehend and he may not always be able to draw experience to himself as perhaps he would wish. But because he cannot fully understand or comprehend does not mean that that which we strive to give is not so. There are many things you take full advantage of in your world, sometimes for man's good and sometimes for his detriment. These powers and these forces which are in nature and have always been there were hidden from man for centuries. He had not realized them, now he benefits from them. These things are not necessarily things that he can see as such, but he can see the effects of them. He can see the power behind them although he may not understand or fully realize them, they are forces in nature. Man is a natural animal, but at the same time he is vitalized by a natural spirit which by its very nature is alive and indestructible. Man has such vague ideas about himself. Even those who profess religious conviction are often confused, often they are in a state of flux about the whole thing. With all their beliefs and knowledge they are still afraid and worried, still uncertain, and quite often childish in their outlook. If only man could realize the immense structure of himself, which is not just a physical structure but a spiritual one. Man by the very nature of being a spirit is indestructible. He is, by his very nature and his very being, a God in embryo. He is like a delicate plant that is gradually unfolding. But there are many weeds that have a tendency to choke it. These are the weeds of ignorance and foolishness. They must be plucked out, and gradually they shall be. Man will learn how to thrive, how to express himself, how to grow in spiritual stature, and how to overcome all the baser aspects of self. The earth world is a training ground. It has been a training ground for untold centuries. Millions upon millions of centuries have passed and man is still learning and has often to come back and learn more, and make good, and progress. But it does not alter the fact that the spirit is expanding all the time, even when the physical body seems at times unable to grasp its power, and its beauty, and its magnificence. Nevertheless, the physical body is important as a temporary home through which these powers and these beliefs and these truths can be expressed. Man must be patient, but he must realize that he is not just a body, not just something that is born, has its being for a time and then dies. This is but an episode in many chapters of experience. Man must not see himself just as he sees himself in a mirror, not just as he sees himself in one existence. This is purely, and only, part of himself. Douglas Konaka. Chapter 1. The Reality of Reincarnation. It was exciting to be near London again and to continue my sittings with Mr. Leslie Flint. Mickey's voice was soon heard, and after his happy welcome and opening remarks, very personal on this occasion, I heard my husband's voice. Douglas, with great joy, at last. At last. It seems such a long time since I spoke to you. Can you hear me? Self, yes, Very well, dear. What a coincidence it seems that you should come back to speak to me, after your so-called death, so near to where you once lived. Douglas, ah. You mean Bayswater. That takes us back a few years. It was when I was very young. Is the house still there? Self, yes, but converted into flats now. Douglas, this was considered a very good residential neighborhood in those days. I suppose it has gone down. With haste, oh dear. I should not say that, considering Mr. Flint lives here. Laughter. But it was very peaceful and quiet in those days, just horses and carriages, you know. Well, my dear, how do you like your new home? Self, it will be very pleasant when I get used to living in one room. Douglas, I have a feeling you may yet have another move. Self, did you get that from my mind? Douglas, possibly. I am constantly with you, and know what you are thinking most of the time. I have been looking forward tremendously to this. Is there something you would particularly like me to discuss today? Self, some time ago you said you would like to talk about reincarnation again. Douglas, that is such an enormous subject that it would take many sessions. I think the most important thing to realize in regard to reincarnation is the fact that it is something which is not necessarily essential in every instance. In other words, not everyone incarnates again, although many do, in fact, the vast majority. But, of course, we have to go back centuries upon centuries and realize that there are many souls who have incarnated on several occasions, and now do not feel the need to incarnate again. One has to accept the fact that in one life on Earth one can only hope to skim the surface of experience, and it is often necessary to re-enter the Earth world to live a new life in a new body, as a new being. Sometimes it is essential to experience certain happenings which can only be experienced under conditions which are quite different to those when you were on Earth before. Then again, I think we should remember that there are individuals who choose to return to do a special work. Most of the great teachers and prophets of old were very old souls who chose to return to do a certain work in a certain age, to set an example and show the path for others who might follow. Self, many people cannot accept reincarnation. Douglas, although it may sound rather odd, I do not think it really matters. There are bound to be people with differing views and different strata of experience, and, of course, there are many people to whom reincarnation is repugnant, and who, in many instances, will not have the need to reincarnate, will not want to reincarnate. There are so many souls on Earth who have experienced a great deal in previous lives of which, more likely than not, they remember little or nothing at all, and in a way that is a good thing. People are always saying, if one could remember this or that, it would be very good evidence and proof of it. But since we do not remember, how do we know? But the point is this, that in many instances it would be a bad thing to have recognition or remembrance of previous lives because that would be a barrier rather than a help. For instance, if you remembered certain aspects of life that were, in your own case, bad from the point of view, that you did something you should not have done which was detrimental to your spiritual advancement, you would then, if you remembered this too vividly, be on your guard in your next incarnation, and you would be artificially avoiding things. If you want to do good, or if you want to live a life that is good, or do things that are wise, then these things must spring from within yourself and come naturally. If you do things because you think you should do them, perhaps because in a previous incarnation you neglected a certain aspect of yourself, or if you do them against your will, then that is not good in itself. It must spring naturally from within your innermost soul. Many people say, oh well, if I knew where I went wrong last time, I could avoid it. But if you knew where you went wrong or knew what your failings were, and in this incarnation you were on your guard and saying to yourself, now I must not do this, or I must not do that, and this is where I went wrong last time, you would probably, almost certainly, be doing something through fear. You would not be doing it naturally. Man must learn to live according to his inner conscience, his inner realization of things that are wise and good. Self, does the subconscious mind retain memories of past lives? Douglas, yes, It can do, but unfortunately it is invariably very difficult to recapture past memories. One has to force oneself, one has to endeavor very hard to jog one's memory. I think it is at times possible, but it is not a general thing. Some individuals are able to tap the source of knowledge of these things. Self, do you know about your incarnations? Douglas, I have known all about them for some time, and now I am getting to know a little more of the details. There are some incarnations of which one has little knowledge or realization, because in themselves they played a very unimportant part. I suppose you could call them formative lives, and formative experiences of Earth, which were so basic. In any case, one has to go back to the time of incarnation and realize that one was, to some extent, the product of an age. It is important to realize that what is generally accepted as the thing to do, and the outlook of life that one may have in that period of time may not necessarily fit in with, could not fit in with, another age. There is so much that one has to take into consideration. For instance, a person may not be, according to the age in which he lived, as bad a person as perhaps we would think in retrospect, because he may have been the product of an age when cruelty was the accepted thing. This may sound like an excuse, but the point is that there are things that do not happen in your life today which were commonplace 100 years ago. Today you do not hang children, but 100 years ago it was not an unknown thing for a child who stole a loaf of bread to be hanged. We are the product of our age and our time and our thinking. The thought force of an age is so powerful that it affects the whole of life, it affects the whole of humanity. An age is predominantly as it thinks, and the people of that age are the product of the minds of a previous generation. We are all in an age of change and evolution, and an individual life in a certain age is essential and necessary. We learn, and we make terrible mistakes, and we experience failure. But the point is that it is often necessary for a human being to incarnate in a new life and a new age to contribute something which is very necessary not only to his own evolution and development but also to the age in which he is reborn. There are, of course, instances of this, souls who stand head and shoulders above the people of their time. They are great leaders or great teachers, great prophets or great seers, and they are looked upon as either geniuses or people out of their time, people who perhaps are not always accepted in their age, people who do not seem to fit in. These are old souls who have chosen to return or, in some instances, have been sent back. But no one really re-enters into the world unwillingly. I do not think one can say that anyone is forced back. The majority of people desire to enter the world again, they feel the need for experience, or perhaps they feel the need to do a specific work. Everything is law and order. Everything is logical. The extraordinary thing is that people always say, for instance about spiritualism, or communication, or reincarnation, or whatever it might be to do with the psychic or the spiritual, that it is not logical. Actually, the most logical thing of all is this spiritual realization. People cling to the material and think that is the logical, but it is not, it is the most illogical. Self, have we really been together in former lives? Douglas, emphatically, oh, we have had several Egyptian incarnations, one in ancient China, one, to my knowledge, in ancient Rome. And also we were to some extent influential in the late 17th and early 18th centuries in bringing into being a new realization of the teachings of Christ, but this was very difficult because it was an age when orthodoxy was very powerful. We did have an interpretation and a realization of the Christian faith which we tried to instill and impress, and bring into being, but it was, of course, very difficult. You know, at one time we had a link with Holland. Self, I believe that in that incarnation, to save my head, I joined the Catholic Church and entered a convent. I have vivid mental pictures of myself at that time. Douglas, yes, it was in that age that we had this realization of true Christianity, but the circumstances became very difficult, and if we were to keep our heads, as you say, if we were to keep our lives at all, and possibly later do something of value, we had to pretend on the surface to accept the Orthodox religion. I am afraid we were not able to do as much as we hoped.